The American poet and essayist Wendell Berry has written this piece. It's a very strange title. To a Siberian woodsman after looking at some pictures in a magazine. Who has invented our enmity? Who has prescribed us hatred of each other? Who has armed us against each other with the death of the world? Who has appointed me such anger that I should desire the burning of your house or the destruction of your children? Who has appointed such anger to you? Who has set loose the thought that we should oppose each other with the ruin of forests and rivers and the silence of the birds? Who has said to us that the voices of my land shall be strange to you and the voices of your land strange to me? Who has imagined that I would destroy myself in order to destroy you, or that I could improve myself by destroying you? Who has imagined that your death could be negligible to me now that I have seen these pictures of your face? Some say we should not participate in the glorification of war, and Remembrance Day is certainly not a day in which we do that. There is no glory in war. Despite the Hollywood movies, there is only necessity in war from time to time to defend ourselves from tyranny, be it domestic or foreign, and to attack those, finally, ultimately, who will not desist. And the cost of war is catastrophic. Generations are lost. Love goes unfulfilled. Children, the future of the world, remain unborn. All through her married life, my mother-in-law, Sheila, had a very, very special relic. It was a small pewter model of a Spitfire aircraft from the Second World War. It stood about 6 inches tall, and it was one of her treasures, because the great love of her life, who had given it to her, died in the Battle of Britain. And all through her life, her married life, her life as a family and a mother and a grandmother, she kept that little pewter Spitfire nearby to remember that which was lost. In the Battle of Normandy alone, 420,000 Allied and German casualties, killed, wounded, and missing. 420,000. In one day, 209,000 Allied casualties, 37,000 dead in ground forces, and 13,000 dead in air forces. There were 5 beaches on that day, 50 miles of fortified coastline. The Nazi regime had constructed what they called the Atlantic Wall. It stretched 2,000 miles from Norway to Spain. There were 3 levels of defenses to it. 1.2 million tons of steel were used to construct it. 17 million cubic feet of concrete was poured into it. And the cost of it in today's money would be $200 billion. All along the way, there were mines and obstacles and bunkers and tank turrets, machine guns, flamethrowers, most of them built by slave labor. Indeed, in the north of Norway today, there are still cement bunkers, and when they are x-rayed, the bones of the slaves who died building them, who simply fell dead on the construction and were dumped into the refuse, remain. This is the face of war. And we must remember its face. It's ugly. Both Old and New Testaments, however, are riddled with wars. Have you seen that in the text? Invasions, one after the other, with the ideology of entitlement always pushing them along. We are entitled to be here, says the text. God gave us the land in which you live. And there are raids by imperial powers, and they just stay and stay, and they drain the local population by their occupation. Everyone becomes desperate. And then during riots, there is ethnic cleansing and mass deportations, just like today in our world. Violence and deprivation of war stain the sacred text from one end to the other. And yet, like a tenacious flower piercing an asphalt highway, there is within the texts and within our human hearts a desire for peace, for calm lives, for safe homes, for generations of children able to grow up free and able to laugh and to play, and for crops that will keep maintaining us so we all don't starve to death. There is a longing to cross over from the wilderness of warfare into the peace of a promised land. And such things are deep as this day is deep. No words can grasp them, yet words are some of what we need to mark the crossing. We approach it best by liturgy, I think. As we were sitting in the One Question Bible Study group in the chapel, which is, by the way, the place we're going to meet on a Sunday morning at 10 o'clock, there's always lots of other things going on in the chancel. And today the children were rehearsing, and you could hear bagpipes practicing in the distance. The 78 Fraser Highlanders were out in the hall making sure that one foot follows the other in proper form. And there was a cacophony of sound all over the church. We were doing our liturgy. You see, the word liturgy means people's work. It's what faithful people do. It is essential for us to walk through the things we deeply believe so that our body motion, our body understanding takes place and helps us to hold on to the values we hold most dear, because we are being walked through liturgies every day that the secular society would lay on us. Walk to the mall, take out your credit card, buy 50 things, 45 of them which you may not need. There are lots and lots of secular liturgies, and we as people of faith are invited to walk through again and again the liturgies which are meaningful to us, to tell us who we are. I saw a wonderful liturgist last week in the Scotsman John Bell, who sings and leads liturgies around the world. This is one of the opening paragraphs he used in a worship service. Listen to how beautiful the language is. Leader, if we come to your house, would we find the door open? For there is no closing hours for the hospitality of heaven. People, if we come to your house, would we hear many accents, ours just one among them, for there is no favored nation in the commonwealth of heaven? Leader, if we came to your house, would we see people who never thought they would be allowed in? People, gather us into the glorious assortment of unlikes, which is your true church. Do you hear how that runs against many of the themes in the secular world by which we are bombarded every day? We need to choose intentionally places to be together, to walk through the liturgy which sustains our life, to teach our children. We are not to be prisoners of culture, prisoners of its war. Now, such crossings call for a cairn of occasion, and we offer this cairn to you this morning. Flags and uniforms and a period of silence and music that touches the themes and tears in the eyes and an unspeakable gratitude rising among us for the sacrifices that have been made. We lift simple symbols that mean far more than we can ever say. I first saw his name in the Book of the Dead in the Peace Tower in Ottawa. It was many years ago, and I didn't expect to find it there. It was a name only spoken rarely among the older members of my family that I can recall from childhood. The name was William McPherson Sinclair, Private, 2nd Battalion, Gordon Highlanders, British Expeditionary Force. Died of his wounds 25th of November, 1914, at the Battle of Ypres. Later on, I found that he was buried in the Netley Cemetery in Hampshire, in England, and that he had lived with his parents at 23 Crown Street in Inverness. I saw the house once, walking past it, and realized how sad the postman would have been to walk up that very driveway with the envelope from the War Department saying that William had been killed. Years later, I thought of him. I'd never thought of him before, and I thought on the internet, with my limited skills, I would try to find him. And I punched in his name, and up he came. And suddenly there was his presence in the room all around me. And I looked down, and it was 90 years to the day of his death. Isn't that unusual? 90 years to the day of his death, and he appeared before me on the screen in my office. Years later, our eldest son, David, who is a film producer, was filming the trenches and the dugouts in France and became ill and ended up in hospital in Ypres. There he was, a young man in his 30s, in hospital in Ypres, surrounded by the bodies of a million young men who died in Ypres. It brought it very close to me. We are one people across borders and time and circumstance, and so we robe and we wear our uniforms and we raise our banners and we seek to cross over from the pain of the past, acknowledging it, to the peace of a promised land. When I walk to the cenotaph along the street on Remembrance Day, I am seeking the cairn of occasion, and I'm sure many of the thousands who gather with me are the same. Flags lowered to the ground at the right moment, soldiers dressed from the various wars standing, leaning on their rifles with their heads down in mourning, wreaths laid by those who remember, flowers of the forest played by the piper, and then the period of silence, and overhead, droning in the distance, comes the sound of Harvard trainers in the missing man formation flying over the city hall. Tears have come to me by then. That's all I need. No words. No one from the mayor's office telling me how I'm to feel. I already feel the things. When we speak in life, it must be at a level of this true and deep communication. Do not swallow the elixir of false leadership. We hear that elixir every day around us. False leadership, the denial of deeply perceived truths in order for self-gain or for our side against another. Measure all leaders against the great laws of life, the texts tell us. They are reflecting what is deeply honorable and true. Are the leaders kind, we need to ask? Do the leaders care, we need to ask? Are they willing to dream big and broadly for us and for those on the other side of the line? Hold out your dreams for the leaders you most envisage. Models of integrity and virtue and social courage, says the text. Do not fall for the feet of flash, because it's going to turn ghoulish over time. Flash always does. Honor the great laws we've unearthed together, says the text. The great laws keep us from falling on our faces again and again, generation after generation. Anna Florence Carter is an American preacher from the South, and she was telling us recently, when you're studying Bible study, we argue with each other about the nouns and about the adjectives. A Pharisee and a publican went up to the temple to pray, and we argue how bad was the Pharisee, how good was the publican. Was he really good? Was he really bad? Have we got it wrong? Were we welcome at the temple? Were we not? Was it a big temple? Was it a little temple? And soon we're fighting with each other. Never mind the nouns and the adjectives, she says. Consider the verbs in the text, the verbs. Saw, went, listened, heard, spoke. We live the verbs, she said. Speak to the people in your study groups about the verbs we share. We fight over the nouns, Russia, Trump, white supremacy, black power, land claims, pipelines, taxes. But it's the verbs that bring us together. Imagine, think, plan, argue, reason, lament, plead, reject, accept, adore, watch, feel, trust, strive. I spoke to 40 United Church of Canada people yesterday in Collingwood, Ontario, and I asked them to tell me the verbs that best bespeak the mission of the United Church of Canada in the uncertain future we face and the vision of the United Church of Canada in the uncertain future we face. These were some of the mission verbs: serve, listen, witness, engage, feed. These were some of the vision verbs: appreciate, discern, look deeply, dream, love, celebrate, respond. Does that sound like us? Does that make the world better, those verbs we share? In a world that struts and bristles with war, the crossing demands a true conversation, true verbs spoken deeply to each other from the heart. In truth, we are both just and unjust, at times cruel and kind, at times we can wish some folk good, we can wish other people ill, that's the way we are. Leadership can be visionary or dictatorial or demonic, that's the way it is. And minions will scoop in to sweep up ill-gotten gains, and the skirmishes and the battles and the slaughter, we know, will continue. But some will see the big picture. Some will step back and feel the pain of those whom we call enemy. Some will lament. Some will determine at cost to make a better world. Let us be among those who desire to do it better. It captures the heart of remembrance. Well, I made a little list, a little life list, of the way I want to live and not live. Nobody else much cares. It's my little list on a piece of paper, words like not hiding, not fearing, not abusing. I want to trust and to care. I don't want to resent the rich and have scorn for the poor. I don't want prejudice and social stereotypes to ruin the real lives that are walking before me and around me. I want to love being alive. I want to be kind. I want to be useful some way in my time. I want to leave a stone in that tall cairn to which we come most deeply. I want to write a clause, just a little clause in the book of life that someone might read someday and take heart from. I want to leave a little of the sweet scent of a purity of heart, just on a best day, a little sweet scent. And these things I bring to the silence of this Remembrance Day to make sensitive to them, to feel them inside my life, to feel the cost of carrying them, because there is a cost in these things. And I am grateful in it all for the hard-won spaces in which I am able to reflect on the meaning of my life. Others whom I have never met have paid the supreme sacrifice for that. I'm determined to do better, to see better, to be better from this day on, to cross over from one world to another in this life passage. And we all stand at this crossing in the very moment. Scars on the one side, promise on the other. We all stand at the crossing. We need the best of flesh and blood and vision to claim the promised land we've already been able to name. Wendell Berry ends his poem, The Siberian Woodsman, whose picture I saw in a magazine, like this. There is no government so worthy as your son, who fishes with you in silence beside the forest pool. There is no national glory so calmly as your daughter, whose hands have learned a music and go their own way on the keys. There is no nation glory so compellingly as my daughter, who dances and sings and who is the brightness of my house. And there is no government so worthy as my son, who laughs as he comes up the path from the river in an evening with joy. Isn't that the side of the river we most want to be on, to long to be on? And there are those in our lives who help us cross over, and we remember them on a day like this, names and faces, smiles, attitudes, words of wisdom, those who may be away today or at a distance, or those who have passed on. On this central table, there is a candle that will be burning. It represents them, and at the end of the service, before you go home, I invite you very quietly in your own time to come and simply to put your hands around the warmth of the flame and to give thanks for those whom you remember who help you on a Remembrance Sunday at the crossing over.